Accession number 28698, Reel 26.
So you've moved out to Northern Ireland in January 1990. Have you got the right date?
Yep, 2nd of January 1990. We're back in Bessbrook Mill. As the Armagh Rulamon Battalion, or the ARB as we called it, which was the battalion's 11th tour of Northern Ireland since troubles broke out in 1969. Because we had a large area, we had 4 Sphinx Battery of the Royal Artillery with us. We had D Company 2 Para attached to us. We had the Army Air Corps and the RAF helicopters, all as part of our battle group for the ARB role. By the 10th of January, we were in full command of the whole of the South Armagh again. And 10 days later, our base, one of our bases at Newton Hamilton, was mortared. And the local MP for the area, I'm sure you know, a guy called Seamus Mallon, MP, said it was a cynical attack. Luckily, 4 of the rounds, which were actually gas cylinders adapted, had failed to explode. If they had gone off and hit the LPG tanks that heated the whole of the camp up and all the water, it would have destroyed the camp and the local area. We're lucky because the guys are in bomb-proof accommodation, so providing the doors were closed, they might have survived. Not so the people in the village of Newton Hamilton, because it would have took all their houses and the pub out.
You mentioned bomb-proof accommodation. Can you describe that?
Yeah, the doors are about over a foot thick, with armour plate inside and outside and concrete in the middle. And it's like a submarine. We call them submarine accommodation because when the doors are shut, one, they're bomb-proof and fireproof. Everything inside then is forced air and you're more or less living underground.
And your roof is similarly protected?
It's almost flat to the ground.
Oh, it's level with the ground?
Yeah, for obvious reasons. It was a busy tour right from the word go, actually. Support company found loads of large calibre ammunition and bomb-making equipment in their particular area, because what we're finding, long-range shooting was done by the old Russian Duchess gun, which is a long-barrelled rifle, I think you can still call it, on 2 wheels, which I'm sure you've seen in war films. They were taking armoured vehicles out, military vehicles and all kinds. D Company realised that Pyra, the Provisional IRA, were regularly stealing mailbags in their particular area. And so realised that's where they were making all their money from. And Air Company, who'd been wondering why none of the trains were ever on time from Newry to Belfast, soon realised that all the railway stations up and down and the ticket offices, the people were either being intimidated, shot, or the ticket office is blown up. So we're getting to grips with the area. And in February, I remember a massive operation that the CO put together to disrupt the Provisional IRA movement in South Armagh. Because we realised doing these bank robberies and all these post office robberies, they were going from village to village and town to town, one way or another. And the CO quickly worked out the only way we're going to capture these people was go out secretly, close all the roads off, and then fly over them with helicopters and see where all the movement of vehicles were. So we did that, and on one particular day, the helicopter crew had noticed a hijacking going in operation. So we sent out the QRF and another helicopter that was coming back over the area with kooks and bottle washers and paycor and all kinds in. And what happened after that was, there was involved hijacked cars, high-speed chasers, this was helicopters chasing cars, machine guns and ammunition were being chucked out of these moving vehicles. Troops on the ground were finding these and radios and saying, it's definitely IRA equipment, keep chasing the cars. And we got down and we made some arrests by capturing the people, and the other cars were getting in the forest areas and in villages and disappearing in the crowd and in other people's houses. Then we saw other cars with their masked IRA in, and again these were spotted by a helicopter from a crew near Cullyhanna. And again, they were throwing away weapons, machine guns and radios. So we tried to catch them as well. But they got in one of the towns. And by the time the ground troops, the people on the ground got in there, the crowds had appeared yet again and the people disappeared. During some of the subsequent searches, we found videotapes that the IRA had taken of helicopters flying over the towns and in and out across McGlen and Fallkill and different valleys that were coming up in the South Armagh area. Later to find out how they were going to put machine guns on the hills to shoot the helicopters down.
Were the helicopter people able to fire on cars that they were chasing?
Not unless you could identify that the people were armed. And the IRA knew that. And that's why they were shoving their machine guns and pistols and rifles out of the vehicles, because they knew if we could see they were unarmed, we couldn't shoot them. I know it's a strange thing to do, but we can't shoot them if they're unarmed. And they knew that. And that's why they were chucking their guns out the windows.
Had anything changed from the time that you were last there? I mean, what,
I was saying the IRA were getting more sophisticated, but they were producing this plan and they were videoing every helicopter that flew over the area. They were determined, like they had on the previous tour, to shoot the helicopters down. Except we're not using the old Willie Wessex now. We were actually for carrying food and rations, but we were using Puma helicopters and Lynx helicopters as fighting helicopters, and they were determined for their own publications to shoot helicopters out the sky. And we knew that they had surface-to-air missiles to do this. And during these searches of these villages, and we found the tapes to prove that's what their intentions were to do. But we found more ammunition finds, and some of them were found when we realised, why were the IRA ploughing fields in the middle of summer? Well, what they were doing, they were digging hides for ammunition and weapons and explosives in the middle of fields. Then they were ploughing over the fields because they knew by using infrared, flying over the area, we could tell the ground had been disturbed and we were finding their explosives and ammunition that way. So what they would do, they'd go out in the middle of the night, bury it, and a farmer would come next morning and plough over the fields. And we thought, no, you only plough in the autumn and the winter. And that's how we worked out what the IRA were doing then.
And could you find these catch of arms?
Yep. That's exactly how we did it. By people thinking, people like me out in the country thinking, you don't plough this time of the year. And
but you'd have to find them in the field itself, even when, once you got on the ground.
We've been learning for a couple of years of telltale signs, markers, posts, telegraph poles.
They would have to mark it.
And they were doing exactly the same, so they could find it in the dark. And we picked up how they were doing it, so we could find them as well. At the same time, we'd moved into Newry as a company area as well, so we were looking after the border town of Newry, which was infiltrated with the provisional IRA as well. And we found out the IRA were carrying out punishment shootings by kneecapping their own people and intimidating other people by shooting them in the backs of the knees and everything else. And the beatings and the bombings were forever going on. And we found a massive bomb-making factory. And we caught another tourist on a bus, who jumped on a bus when he saw the patrol coming. So we searched everybody on the bus, and he had a rifle hooked on the back of his coat inside his jacket. And we found that. So all these kind of things were going on, but we were working all this out, and we were catching more and more people.
What was the battalion spirit like then? After, as you say, when at the end of the previous tour, it was pretty down. Was it up again now?
Oh, morale was sky high again. We're trained again, like I said. We used a period of time to retrain for the South Armagh. We knew it was going to be rough anyway, so we highly trained the blokes in every type of operation that we knew we were going to carry out. And we were starting to carry operations out by stopping all these vehicles on the road in the middle of the night and early hours of the morning. And we eventually ended up with the Scots Guards attached to us because we had 12,000 men, 1,200 men, on one particular operation to do that. And we had the trouble is we had our first death at the same time when Lance Sergeant Stewart of 2 Scots Guards was killed, again near Cully Hannah. And a private Atfield from 2 Para was shot in the back of the legs, again just outside of Cully Hannah. Because this is where the main IRA gang were, this particular group of terrorists. And we never got these gunmen. They were very clever, but they were so Cullyhanna's right on the border. So by the time we got there, even by helicopter, they skedaddled, got across the border, and they were in the south. We could not fly or drive into the south.
Did you get no cooperation from the Southern Irish people?
Yeah, we just let the Garda know, but the Garda seemed to always miss these people, and quite rightly so. I mean, it wasn't in their interest to let them go, so I'm sure they did attempt to catch them, but they never did.
What about the intelligence then where you were working on? Were you getting plenty of intelligence?
Yes, we were getting good intelligence, and we were using the special forces as well. SAS were attached, not to the battalion, but they're working in our area. Again, to catch things like this going on, catch terrorists, catch murderers. So they had their own directive as well. But they were living under our roof, if you want, in a fair bit of secrecy. And it was also in the first month, of course, I had my 40th birthday. And that's when the commanding officer realised, RSM, shouldn't you be out the army today? But I didn't know he'd secretly sent for my wife to be flown in and then brought up from Aldergrove under a blanket in a car and brought him Bessbrook Mill, where we never ever, no women ever came to Bessbrook because you were too close to the trouble. But my wife turned up on my birthday, courtesy of the commanding officer. So that was a highlight of my 40th birthday. A lot of time as RSM was spent with the CO in helicopters, because we'd fly from Forkhill across McGlen to Newton Hamilton over these areas of Cullyhanna and Silverbridge and all these other tourist areas, and we'd go and visit the company, sometimes for discipline if somebody had done something wrong in one of the areas. So we'd go out so the commanding officer could charge them, and I would do my RSM duties. Other times we'd go out to visit people in Cross McGlen or Forkhill. Of course, it was weather like this, being January and February, and we'd get snowed in. And we couldn't even get out by helicopter. The snow was just too heavy for the helicopters, or the winds were too high, or it was just not flying conditions. So we'd end up having to stay with the troops on the ground. Other times we're obviously spent in ambushes on top of hills, observing tourist movement to do these pincer movements to catch them in the cars and the vehicles, or digging in ammunition in the middle of these fields, when we'd had good intelligence.
Did you wear snow apparel?
No, but the company commanders asked, could they have snow suits? So when they were lying out in the snow, they could be camouflaged. But it wasn't operationally viable, and we never got the authority to do it either. Other things that were happening was we'd have the recce platoon, or the close observation platoon, in hedgerows, in fields or grass fields, when it was getting to March and April time. And IRA weren't daft, and they were sending kids out with dogs, and it was to see if they could find soldiers hiding in the fields and in the hills and behind gorse bushes. And they were quite right. They half thought they knew where we were. So what they would end up doing, they would go and set fire to the hedgerows and to the fields, and they would try and burn the troops out. They had every trick in the book, and we'd hang in there as long as we could till the soldiers were saying, I think in the next 10 minutes we're going to be on fire if you don't come and get us. And that way we'd send troops in by helicopter, flush the area that way, get the troops into the helicopters and fetch them back to camp or back to safety, fly them around and drop them in somewhere else. But the IRA, if they suspected we had troops on the ground, would burn you out. Other periods of time were spent on the hilltop OPs, because on all the hilltop we had Golf and Romeo towers, I'm sure you've seen on television, and the troops were up there with armoured glass and some of the most sophisticated cameras and viewing devices in the country, and we'd be observing cars and observing people and everything. We could cover the area instead of patrolling it, we could cover it from these OP towers. And again, it was submarine accommodation that was dug underground, and again there was these armoured bunkers underground where people would eat and sleep and use the toilets and everything else. And they were a good place for the patrols who were patrolling the areas of South Armagh on a night time to come in. Once they got through the barbed wire entanglements and the trip flares and everything else, they could sleep in safety overnight and then next morning set off again to do their day patrols.
Did these become targets?
Yeah, people, they would always be trying to mortar them or do something. But the perimeter fences were so far out, the IRA couldn't. Although, having said that, the workmen that would come in to service the cameras and the CCTV cameras, there was quite a few civilians got shot once they'd gone up the ladders to mend the aerials or the television cameras, and a few actually got shot off them, yeah.
So any civilian working in an army, for an army job, was liable to be shot by their own...
Oh, they did. They used to get money for working for the MOD, and if they ever got caught working for the MOD, it was a death sentence anyway, and they knew that. Anyway, this tour went on and off till June, and we'd had a good tour, and we hadn't lost any men, put it that way, and we'd done an awful lot of damage to the IRA. We'd captured a lot of their arms and ammunition, we'd put a lot of people in jail. It was a successful tour. It was just sad that we lost a guardsman attached to us and a paralad who got shot in the legs.
Have the rules of engagement changed?
No, it was always kill only to protect yourself, your comrades, and that was it really. When you were leaving in the June area and we got back to Tidworth, and of course that was the end of me really in the army, because I'd only signed on for the 5 months to finish that tour. So when we said goodbye to the police and the everybody else that we'd made friends with in Ireland, that was the end of another Northern Ireland tour.
When you caught, as you did, obviously, some IRA people, were they touched? Were they physically manhandled?
No, they were captured and they were handed immediately over to the IUC. In fact, you took the IUC out with you in the helicopters. They would make the arrest. That way we didn't have to come back into the province at a later date when these people appeared in court. The other thing that was going on during that back end was extradition. We had Northern Irish IRA who were in jail in the south, and we wanted them back in the north to put to trial. So we had to rehearse with the Garda police, the Northern Ireland police, and the helicopters, because they weren't allowed to push them into the north, back into the north, and we weren't allowed to cross into the south to grab them. So where you'd find the narrowest stream bed that depicted the border, and you would put 6 foot planks across, and then you would put barbed wire and 6 foot pickets around that particular area, and the IUC from the north would stand within a foot of the guard eye from the south, with the IRA prisoner in the middle, and it was a case of when he left go, he had to grab at the same time. Fetch him into the north, put him in this wire compound, arrest him, has been caught now in the north of Ireland, into a Puma helicopter, and out back to Bessbrook Mill, and then jail him. It was a sophisticated operation. And again, as I was saying, that was one of my main functions, to coordinate that.
What was the attitude of that particular person when he was caught? Was he... denying or what?
Oh, that wasn't for us. That was for the interrogators, the police, special branch, and MI5, if you want, to have enough information on them to put them inside. And we did have some successful people put away.
There must have been a response of some kind from your soldiers when you saw beatings and kneecapping and this kind of thing, right?
Well, it would be an after thing to us. We would find them in the back alley. Some would be kneecapped by being shot from behind the knee to blow your kneecaps off. That was why it was called kneecapping. Some would be placed so you couldn't find the empty bullets over a drain or a manhole cover, so the bullets were shot down into the manhole cover. Others, if it was to be done fairly silently, would be done with a cordless Black & Decker drill, and they would drill into the kneecaps. But this has been going on since the early 70s as well. It was always called kneecapping.
And the civilians in your area in South Armagh, well, they were basically IRA, were they?
Most of them were in the Republican areas, were obviously IRA sympathisers, or they were so scared to say anything because nobody knew who was really active. So they would cooperate with the IRA before they would cooperate with us. But there was always other people who wanted vengeance for different reasons, would tout and tell the intelligence forces the information we required. So we'd go and make arrests.
And again, booby traps that you were become coming into contact with? What were they like? What were they doing?
There was always the risk of what was called culvert bombs. That was any pipework that went over a road that somebody might drive down, or a field that they knew would have to use to go through the gate posts. So we didn't go through gate posts. We'd jump through the hedgerows because we knew they couldn't booby trap everything. But they could booby trap barbed wire fences. So if you stood on at one end, and if you wobbled the thing, the bomb would go off somewhere. But they never knew where we're going to cross. So we would avoid target points where they thought we were going to go through. And that's what saved our lives. But it was another drill. We were taught before we would go to Northern Ireland, we'd pick up things off the ground, off the unit that had been there before us, and then you quickly worked out where things were booby-trapped and not booby-trapped. But they were getting sophisticated in the towns of Newry and places like that, because again, they would booby-trap, they'd put IRA flags on lampposts and then they booby-trap them, knowing that was a temptation for a soldier to pull the flag down, especially if it was a Southern Irish flag, and of course it would be booby-trapped and you'd be killed. They then got the sophistication of tying bicycles to road signs in the towns of Newry, and the triangle of the bike frame would be full of explosives, and the reflector on the back would be the initiation inside, and somebody would be on the other side of the road with the detonator to initiate electronically to the detonator would blow the bikes up. And there was all kinds of sophistication coming in of what they would booby trap to try and catch a soldier out. And it was just learning and getting through with the soldier not to touch anything that was suspicious, especially flags, because we had people in other battalions killed by pulling flags off tops of buildings and lampposts especially, and the lampposts would be full of explosives.
And snow conditions, you would see tracks, presumably, that would help you, but they would see tracks as well. Was this a problem?
Oh, absolutely.
Moving around in snow?
Well, we were trying to stay on the high ground. I mean, they knew where we were, but they didn't know exactly where we were. And, of course, we could fly in and fly out. I mean, they couldn't do that. They would have to drive in and drive out so we could see their tracks. But we would get dropped in by a helicopter and disappear into the woods and the villages and, yeah.
And the tracks, you've obviously dropped by helicopter and you've got to walk, so there'll be some tracks. How was that erased by the helicopter?
We'd moved out of the area by first light. We would go. And then before first light came, we'd be back in the helicopter and gone out of the area. So it don't matter how they tracked the tracks to where we got off, they'd only find out where we'd left from. We'd never leave anybody behind.
So the basic thing was that they were trying by unexpected methods to kill you when you were doing similar methods to baffle them and capture them.
We could cover a lot of the ground from the Golf and Romeo Towers, of course, by being in the observation post, and that didn't put anybody in danger.